For March the 22nd, 2019, we talk about Devil May Cry 5, Surviving Mars, and we ask you about your favorite small details in games. Welcome to Level 278. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
And I'm Jell Apprentice.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome back, Dennis. We are rocking it four style once again.
Woo-hoo! Good to be here.
Four on the floor. You been doing some traveling?
I haven't, but my wife has, which means I've been doing some traveling to local parks with the boys.
Oh, that's cool.
It was incredibly merciful that the weather decided to get really nice when I was single parenting. So I spent pretty much all day after work outside, and it was glorious. I tell you what, I never can remember having this when I was a kid, but at Summit Park near my house, there are these hills with like turf that they're made out of turf. But it's like slippy slidey hills for you don't actually need snow. You just like literally just like slide down them.
What?
And the entire thing is, yeah, a giant slide. But you bring yourself a little cardboard box and tear off a side. And suddenly, man, that thing is a luge. Like that is super fast. And they got a big sign that says, you know, no cardboard boxes next to it. But no self-respecting kid is going to listen to that sign.
No, I mean.
No self-respecting parent is not going to enable their kids with cardboard. That was a blast.
I mean, yeah, no, that's a sign that says do not do something is just instructions for what to do.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah.
So we had a lot of fun with that, and playing outdoors in general and eating less healthy than we probably should. But, you know, it's special time.
Yeah. That's the thing.
Mom's away, so you got to party, you know.
That's right. Well,
mom's away, so breakfast for dinner.
Well, and so Jen is cool with this, so I can talk about it, which is, you know, because of her diabetes, we tend to eat very carb low.
Right.
And so when she is traveling, it's like, go ape, you know, go hog wild, you know, get that pizza.
Right.
Get that, get all that bread.
Yeah.
So we tend to go that direction. I don't know if you can hear Luke saying hi right now.
Yeah.
Hey, Dennis, I think somebody's murdering your son.
Yeah.
No, what this means is he was slightly too slow to listen when we told him to go upstairs and get dressed for bed and didn't get the story he wanted.
Oh, okay.
Which in a 4-year-old's mind equates to murder.
Oh, yeah. That's the end.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I might read the mute button for a second here.
Okay. I think we can pick it up. How's it going, David? Anything cool in the past week?
Not too much. Just trying to... keep on keeping on. If you have you'll soon have a new way to print out your charges, so there's that.
Do you want me to bleep the name of the company you work for?
Sure, why not? Yeah.
Okay. Just bleep it.
That's a fairly positive thing. Like, you know, we are, you know, developing new features for you, but still just in case.
Yeah. So if you participate in the economy,
yeah,
look forward to that. Oh man, cool. Yeah, no, it's how about you, Jell? What's up?
Well, about the only thing that's happened since the last time that I was on the show was that I got a standing desk and a new chair, and it took forever to get everything all set up and, you know, deep clean everything and get the old desk out and reassemble everything. Cause you know, that also meant that I had to clean my PC itself, like the interior of the tower and all that.
Oh, So
like that was an all day thing. And actually I just got my monitor stand in so I can get that all set up, but it's like one of those with little arms so you can adjust where the monitors are. And so I still like that's going to be another here. Let's pull the desk out that I just put up.
Yeah.
And I'm like, OK, I'm not going to mess with that right now. That will be tomorrow.
It doesn't matter how diligent you are about cleaning back there. The area under your desk is always a fucking nightmare.
It is a nightmare forever. Yeah. So, there is that. And then other than that, I am now going to be, I decided I was going to start doing like an 8-week shred program to trim up a little bit so you can see all of those muscles that I have even more than you already do. So, it's been like a few years since the last time I actually made some kind of concerted effort to do that. Mm-hmm. And so, I decided it was time. So,
nice.
That's the thing I'm doing. So that means like it's I would say, oh man, so all this talk about, you know, getting the pizza or whatever would bother me, but really it doesn't, because like, you know, I have plenty of calories. They're just like, you know, allocated differently. So yeah.
Cool.
What about you, Cole? What are you up to?
So
what did Greta do?
No, Greta's been fine. She has been very enthusiastic about belly scratches today, which is fun. Anytime I get up from a seat and move, she hops up onto the chair and then rolls over and exposes her belly, which means you better goddamn well scratch my belly. And I'm lucky because oftentimes with cats, that is a trap. That is a plot to get you to get your hand within swiping distance. No, she just really, really enjoys that, which is nice. No, but now she's just curled up on her cat bed, just kind of in the room here, just being like normal.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, that's good that she's normal for now. Is that going to change? Like, does that change during the podcast to where she turns into some kind of little gremlin or something, or what?
No. She tends to, like, she knows when I'm okay. I don't think she knows. I just, in the past, she has tended to, when I am recording, either just kind of stay out of the room or just stay there sleeping. She doesn't get vocal until I move around. At that point, she is all the way. She's all up on my ankles and meowing and trying to get me to go over to her feeder, stuff like that. But during recording, she's fine.
Cool.
Yeah. No, other than that, I decided to build a new PC because it's time.
Okay. Oh, cool.
Yeah.
I need to hear about that.
Is that because of Resident Evil 6 issues or what?
I mean, that was part of the impetus. So, I mean, the network issues persist, and unless I move to a new city, I don't think that's going to be fixed until Spectrum fixes it. But during recording, I kept on getting these little notices saying like, "Oh, the CPU is under strain. You may notice performance issues." This is a little alert that is thrown in XSplit. As far as I can tell, the recordings are just fine, but that kind of like that combined with Immortal Unchained running really weird when I was trying to record it, and just kind of additionally recording a Frostpunk video and having it be all messed up, it's like, you know, this is actually like this is three times that the rickety machine has kind of gotten in the way of doing the work that I need to do. So I just decided to pull the trigger, and, you know, I'd been hemming and hawing about it because of recent dental work that cut into my budget a little bit, but it ends up making more sense to do it. So now I am just refreshing the FedEx listing or the FedEx tracking number to track my processor, graphics card, case, and there's something else that's coming in from Indianapolis.
If it's delivered during the podcast, we're going to swap it out in real time.
Oh, yeah. So it's going to be showing up on the 22nd, which is also the day that Sekiro comes out. So, it'll be an eventful weekend.
So when you pick it off your porch on the 23rd,
It'll be a bunch of parts and stuff, so I'll have to put it together and build it, you know. But yeah, it's been about 5 years. It's hard to believe that my old PC here has been with me for 5 years, but it is time.
My computer is older than that, so I really need to get, like, you know, like, that's part of the reason I've been looking at laptops and stuff like that, too. It's like, okay, I don't know how long this will survive until it starts having jank problems. So. Yeah.
Like, every time, you know, I've done this, you know, I wait so long in between buying other computers that, like, the entire, like, everything changes. The different components have different numbers. Like, I don't know what's like, which number is good anymore. So you end up having to do a bunch of research and stuff like that. But I think I've, you know, put together a good system that's going to last for a while. It's important that I don't have a system that is ugly as sin, which is really hard to do. If you look at cases or even like internals, like, you know, it's like, okay, I want this machine to be water cooled, right? Because part of the deal is it needs to be quiet, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, just doing everything I can to build as silent of a machine as possible. And like literally every component now, it is sold in an RGB version, which just means that it is covered with LEDs that you configure with software or whatever. It's like,
and the last thing when you're recording with a cat in the room that you want is a laser show.
So one of my friends just, what he did is, built his entire PC in a fish tank and just filled it with mineral oil.
I have heard of people doing that. At least I've heard of companies that do that with like servers. Right. Mm-hmm. Just because that disperses the heat really efficiently. Is that the idea?
I'm not entirely sure, I guess.
Yeah. My understanding, it was a heat thing.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure it's something related to that. I don't know the specifics of like why mineral oil and like why that over.
You know, no, I guarantee else. You the first conversation went like, dude, I put a computer in a fucking fish tank. Oh yeah, because like the heat dispersion, huh? Yeah, sure.
Okay, yes.
Oh boy.
But it's like, I don't know. But part of me would worry. You know, you ever travel and you got like a bottle of lotion or a bottle of like body wash or soap or whatever. And you forgot to put it in a Ziploc bag and it broke and got all over everything.
Oh God.
Mm-hmm. Imagine doing that, but with 10 gallons of oil in your house.
Yeah.
I think at that point you just have to move. I just didn't know you had.
Also, you said 10 gallons. So I thought you said 10 pounds. So I was going to say, I think you're dramatically underestimating this.
Yes. Okay. I said, I was picturing a 10 gallon fish tank, which is really small for a fish tank actually. Yeah, so.
Actually it is. Yeah. But, yeah. So I think you are talking about, it needs to be quiet in part because mine is so loud.
I wasn't subtweeting you.
Yeah, but that's all right. I'll call myself out. I have a loud ass PC.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's just something like with my old machine, I for a while I used it as like a living room computer, and so it was important that it be in kind of a squat case that would fit into an entertainment center. It's not really the case anymore now that I have a Steam Link. Like, that's fine now. So I'm gonna, you know, I can optimize for sound, which means not having a fucking glass window on the side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, for me, it just comes down to, like, I move around so much that it's pretty much has to be a laptop, which does not make things easy.
Yeah, well, especially for gaming and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's my excitement. I will do my best to not compulsively check. I mean, at least so far, like, Newegg has sent me, they sent me the number, but it's not registered with FedEx right now. I've got a whole bunch of components sitting in my living room because I went to Micro Center yesterday. All this stuff. So
are you going to be playing Shakira on the PC or PlayStation?
PS4. Yeah.
Ah.
And there has to already be a video of Sekiro stuff set to Shakira, right?
It would have to be. Yeah. I mean,
that has to exist.
Yeah. No, I really don't have any doubts about that. Yep. So that's my story. I feel like I went on for way too long about that. So how do you all feel about doing a regular kind of show?
I also feel buttons. You almost sounded like you were going to button it up.
Nope. How do you all feel about doing the regular kind of show? You know, with the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind. And just to shake things up, why don't we get started with
The Brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. Did somebody just slam on a table?
I did not. I set my drink down, but I was trying to keep myself from screaming.
Oh man. You know, it's a, we're 278 in. I think that I can start messing around with people. It's fine. Jala, you've got the story that I think is on a lot of people's minds right now. And also we're kind of like temporarily in between things. What do we think Google is going to do? And also, what do people already know that Google has done?
Okay, so the Google Yeti is expected to be announced at the Games Developers Conference, GDC, tomorrow. I mentioned this same thing on a brief before, but as Project Stream, when they were doing some testing last year. But here's a little bit more about it. So it's basically, they've been calling it the Netflix of games. It's supposed to be a streaming subscription service where you play the game in real time on any device, meaning your TV, your phone, your tablet, whatever, but it's run on a remote service or on a remote server with the game transmitted over the internet and the control codes sent the other direction back to the server. So Project Stream, which I mentioned before, was run through Google Chrome, and you know, they were just testing the success rate of doing this, you know, the internet problems, because the biggest concern for this kind of a service over the years has always been the latency.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like if you put your controller inputs in and then it takes a second before it actually sends over, then what happens to your game? Did you just die because of the latency issue?
Mm-hmm.
So NVIDIA GeForce Now and PlayStation Now have lowered that latency with what they've released, but it's still been criticized for not being fast enough. Now, Google, though, thinks that it can basically become the leader in this particular market by using new tech and local servers to reduce the distance the latency has to travel over.
Yeah.
So, you know, because Google, as a big, you know, a gigantic, ginormous company, you know, in computer industry, has, you know, servers everywhere. So,
mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah. One thing they can do is throw around enough resources to brute force something.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And so, like, they're thinking that they can reduce the latency enough to make Yeti a viable contender to traditional console gaming. Now,
and yet they couldn't come up with a better name.
This could just be a project title, too.
Yeah. So
the odds that the actual name is way worse are very high.
Yeah. For sure. But so it's also looking likely that this would be released concurrently with its own dedicated console. At least there are photos of a dedicated controller that have been leaked that looks like very Google.
It looks so uncomfortable. I want to scream when I look at the ergonomics of this.
Yeah, it's, you know, got the standard buttons and everything, but it doesn't look like a very, very comfortable controller. It looks pretty blocky is the best way to say it.
I think it looks less comfortable than the Ouya controller.
I think better. It looks less comfortable than the PlayStation Boomerang.
It doesn't look less comfortable than the Sega Saturn analog controller.
God, that, like, so
releasing a dedicated console kind of defeat the purpose of this whole thing?
You would think so. It's just, they haven't had any proof that there is going to be a console. They have seen a controller, and people are jumping to conclusions that therefore they have a console that they are going to release. But, you know, who's to say for sure that that is what, you know, they're going to do? They may not be releasing a console. They may just be releasing controllers and things like that to standardize the inputs.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, that's a possibility. I don't know.
Yeah. If they wanted to completely defeat the purpose, they would sell physical games.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this sort of seems like to me, I feel like maybe this is just me being a horrible cynical person, but I feel like the takeaway is like, hey, do you want to, you know, even less own your games?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I've got a trust problem with this, not necessarily because I'm worried that Google would do something nefarious with it. I think that's
kind of assumed.
Well, yeah, yeah. I mean, I just getting upset about that. It's like getting upset that you get wet when it rains out, you know. But I don't trust them to like treat this as anything other than a hobby that will be dropped, you know, very soon after they put it out. I think that this is weirdly the likeliest scenario in my mind based on past things that Google has done specifically in like the home theater space or anything like in home entertainment outside of like the Chromecast, which is a weird anomaly, you know, I think that they're just doing this to get a whole bunch of attention for some other infrastructure thing. They do not have a great track record of sticking with this stuff after whoever spearheads it moves on to another project.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of like Google has dropped so many different things over the years. Like they start a lot of stuff just to see what the kind of traction is on it. Yeah. But if they don't feel that there are legs to it, they just leave it alone and move on. And they have enough money to bounce back from whatever they do. So
what do you mean I'm bitter that they pulled the plug on Google Reader? What do you mean it's been 6 years and I should move on? What do you mean it's unreasonable to still be upset about this?
The Google chat, I liked their Hangouts, Google Hangouts thing. Yeah. And I don't know, then they had their not Facebook. I forgot.
Yeah, Google Plus.
Forgot.
Yeah.
Oh, it was Google Plus. Yeah,
yeah, I was going to say Plus. Plus, I don't want to glass over their failures here.
But. Yeah, yeah. Let's just go ahead and enumerate a few. Okay.
Am I the only one that ever actually messed around with a Google Glass?
I think so, maybe. I think that you...
In the world.
Well, yeah, yeah, also true.
Well, I mean, like, yeah, you were in the Bay Area when it
those
was...
Those were just horribly, horribly designed.
Oh, yeah. They looked hideous.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not even thinking from the aesthetics thing, just, you know, you basically had, like, a chunk of glass sitting, like, 2 inches in front of your eyes. Like, I don't see how anyone used them without getting horrible, horrible headaches.
Mm.
Like, I'm a huge fan of that idea, but mm-hmm. there's so many better ways to do it.
Yeah. You know, and ways to do it that are not as, like, socially tone-deaf as the way it ultimately ended up going across.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I don't think that it's impossible for this idea to work. I mean, Dennis, I remember you have had good experience with PlayStation Now for certain kinds of games, right?
Yeah. I mean, anything that does not require pinpoint precision works great. And you know, in things that do, you definitely notice, but there's a world of games out there. I'd argue most single player kind of story driven games are ones that you would be able to enjoy just fine through a streaming mm-hmm. service.
Yeah.
Right. And you only had to sacrifice one of your three children.
Oh, so we'll see. By the time you hear this episode, this will have, you know, we will have more details. We will know if there is a box, but you know, on the eve of the announcement, we have a pretty good idea of what the play is going to be.
Let's have one prediction each that we can see who nails it.
I think it's going to be deprecated within a year.
We will see.
It's going to have integration with OK Google Voice.
I was about to say you just activated millions of devices, and then I was about to say you just activated thousands of devices, and now you've activated hundreds of devices. But I'm like, that is a weirdly shitty, dismissive, and snarky attitude. I have no idea what the market share of Google Assistant is compared to other stuff. So
hold on, Alexa, what's the market share of Google? She told me to fuck off. Oh no, it's actually answering. I didn't. Tell me how Google stock is doing.
David, what's your what's your prediction?
I'm betting this is some sort of a back-end way for them to introduce more phone hardware of some sort.
That's a good call. Yeah.
God, that's why the controller looks that way, is you flip it over and it's a smartphone.
Oh yeah, it's like an N-Gage.
Huh.
Which I feel like though, to be fair, Dennis, you're the one who loved what was the like graph game where you had to play like half the game with your controller on upside down?
Oh yeah, Metrico. That was beautiful. Yeah. you know what I figured out looking at this, and this is horrible for a podcast, but looking at it, I just figured out it is scientifically engineered to be the least painful to accidentally step on. Like, it's a very flat profile. I think that was the objective.
Okay. Yeah. It's a good thing that you spend most of your time with a controller stepping on it. They've designed a terrible controller.
As bad as I am, rages easily.
They've designed a terrible controller, but they've also designed a terrible DDR pad. Jesus.
There are no references for scale in these images. So you can't say that you're wrong.
Oh, Dennis, what's going on with No Man's Sky? They're still doing it, huh?
They're still freaking doing it. And I don't know what the business model is here, but I love it. So the last major update for No Man's Sky was Next, which completely overhauled the game, made it playable, for the cynics out there, but just, you know, really filled it with stuff to do and delivered in many ways on the original promise. And that was all done without, any upcharge or any additional cost to people who owned the game. And that made a lot of sense because a lot of people saw it as just delivering on the original promises for the game. However, they then went on to release a huge update for underwater biomes and underwater buildings that, you know, populated the game even further. And that was for free. Now they're doing another huge update that has three pillars. They've only talked about one, and it's going to be a multiplayer overhaul of the game. So drastically deepening and expanding the multiplayer interaction. And they're tight-lipped on exactly what that means, but they have been cleared that both that and the other two pillars are going to be completely free, no extra cost, no subscription, no in-game skins for purchase or anything like that. This team just, like, after the craziness of the initial launch and redemption, is now just pumping out content with no real thought, as far as I can tell, around how to monetize. And like I said, I don't understand it, but I love it.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that they've done really well is have not letting the hype, get away from them.
Mm-hmm.
So Sean Murray, who's the kind of the face of the company, said a little bit about the multiplayer aspect and then said, we want to wait to say more about the other pillars until we can be precise. that is a man who has learned a lesson right there.
Once bitten, yeah.
Yeah. Once bitten, twice professional.
We need to get him to like have a talk with Molly Nukes.
Molino. Has anybody heard from him?
I think the end of Curiosity was that the he imploded.
When you found out it wasn't the boss, it was. No, I was gonna say something really dark.
It was him.
Go on.
No, it was a joke about a person getting hurt. I don't necessarily want that to happen or, you know, anything like that. It just, yeah. Anyway, moving on. This is good that they are simultaneously being generous while also tempering their communication. I think I am doubtful that it's ever going to break even. Not financially, but in terms of like goodwill, because they have an original sin, you know, that basically shipped with the game. But
well, here's oh, go ahead.
No, I was pretty much done. I don't know why I have a but. Like, so I said but mostly just to say this is good, and yeah, I think generosity in the end probably overrides the snarky responses toward it.
Yeah. My thought is that they won back the people they were going to win back with Next, right? Like the people who were pissed about the original launch when Next came out, that was the group that you're getting back, or anyone from that group who was willing to come back came back.
Right.
I don't think there's anyone in that group who was not swayed by the launch of Next that is suddenly going to turn their heads for Beyond this launch. Yeah. Now, I could be completely wrong. We don't know what's in it, but that is the most interesting thing to me, is like this feels like creation for the sheer joy of it.
Mm-hmm.
Or that they truly just are passionate about this, this world, I was going to say, but this universe, that they've created. And that's pretty cool.
Nice.
So have they added yet a truly, not saying this to be snarky, but like an actual game, as opposed to just wandering around?
Very much so. With Next, there was quest design, the story was fleshed out, there were systems in place to truly kind of do so many things. So build a base on a planet that you could return to and actually kind of own a world and kind of really make it your own, I guess is a better way to say that, to building a star fleet that you could add ships to and send them out on missions to collect resources for you, etc. So there was more systems added and more coherency and purpose given to all the systems with Next.
Okay.
Nice. Yeah. So we'll see. What were they saying? Summertime?
Yeah. In summer.
What are you doing? What's that?
I don't know. I felt like singing that one.
Is that a song or were you just...
It is. No, the only words I can think of is in summer. Oh, it's Olaf, the snowman song from Frozen.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that came out like Pavlovian response there to the word summer.
Oh, man. David, what is going on with those Germans?
So, so the German government has recently overruled its famous ruling that, background is Germany doesn't allow free speech for things that are deemed deemed to be, I guess, threats to the country, mainly in the form of Nazism. And yes. Famously, there is a exception for artistic and historical uses. However, video games have not been considered capable of being either of those. And so that's resulted in, games like Wolfenstein and, the various Call of Duties being censored, often in very bizarre ways. However, the German government has now overturned that and has announced that video games can officially be considered art or, culturally relevant.
Yeah.
So, that's kind of the long and the short of it.
Yeah. No, I mean, if there was a double standard for seemingly no really good reason other than an incomplete understanding of what games are. Yeah. Additionally, their worry about, kind of taking the cap off of any of this, any of the imagery or iconography, et cetera, do you end up kind of fostering, or allowing people to, lead kind of a lost cause, kind of movement. Right. However, I imagine that there are other, regulations that would stop, that would stop if somebody was genuinely going to like make a game to glorify anything from their troubled history, especially nowadays with right-wing extremism and white supremacy kind of on the move again. but yeah, it doesn't make any sense that, you know, like they said here, like even back in the early 90s, they were able to air an Indiana Jones movie with the flags uncensored in morning hours, but then if somebody went to play the Indiana Jones game, the flags would be, you know, censored. Like, okay, so like, why can I see that on, you know, Saturday morning television but not in the video game? Like, just a double standard doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. It feels like one of those rules that didn't get changed because no one got around to it.
Yeah,
like how I think pinball was just recently made legal in Portland.
So San Francisco, I think.
Ah, there it is. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Or Manhattan. It was some suspiciously big city that still had an anti pinball rule on the books.
Oh, I mean, until recently, freaking New York still had a anti nunchuck rule on the books.
Oh man. Yeah. So, maybe now people will be able to play the full, or the German people will be able to play the full version of I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream.
Mm. I was going to say there's a clause in here that you're allowed to have the symbology, but it needs to be hyper violent towards any Nazis in the game.
Well, I mean, that's just good sense. That's good business, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the thing that would be interesting would be like, say, like some of the Call of Duty multiplayer games where you can, strictly speaking, play as Nazis.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it'll be interesting to see if that's considered, you know, what's that's considered.
So right.
I never quite got why they didn't do, I remember in the old Fear multiplayer, just no matter which team you were on, the other side always looked like the bad guys. I never understood why they didn't just do that.
I like it. I really enjoy when people do that. I remember, you know, terrible game, but Perfect Dark Zero, they made it so that you're no matter what team you were on, the enemy was always red and you were always green. And I just now saying that out loud, realized that is incredibly confusing for people with color blindness.
Yeah. Forever.
Yep. So, oh, well. And I've got one. This is, you know, patented Cole Ross, something's going to happen story, but I'm excited about it. Did anybody else besides me play House Flipper?
Nope, I did not.
I watched some streams, but that's it.
Okay. House Flipper is a game that came out, I believe, last year, where it's kind of one of these really janky simulation and management kind of games where you play as a person who goes to a wrecked house and cleans it up and puts in new fixtures and then resells it. Additionally, you can take on like special tasks. So like, oh, I want to convert this bedroom, or I want to convert these two bedrooms into one big bedroom. So you go in and do the demolition and build it up. It is a profoundly boring, but to some people like me, very satisfying game. I'm excited to find out that a little bit later this year, in the middle of May, they're going to be releasing their first piece of major DLC, Garden Flipper, which lets you do yard work. So you can literally go and play with the yard work simulator for you Simpsons fans. So in addition to flipping the interior of a house, you can now work on the exterior, go in and do some landscaping, do a little bit of terrain design, tell a story with your shrubs. I am jazzed about this in a huge, big, bad way. Do you want to put out a patio with some furniture and a fire pit? Fuck yeah, gazebos, we got them.
So, is this going to be one of those things where you're going to eventually stream playing this like you were doing with your slimes and stuff?
I think so, maybe. I am very jazzed about this, personally.
And it was weirdly really popular when you did these, like... real slow ass games where people yep. are just like, okay, we are on board for watching Cole do stuff.
Yeah.
So. I need there to be raking sand in this expansion.
Yeah.
That's right? That's what I need.
Oh gosh. Well, there
should be.
With wind that'll come and mess it up and you just have to accept it. So yeah, it's gonna happen. It's the way she goes. So I'm jazzed about this, even if nobody else is. It sounds like I'm being sarcastic. It sounds like I'm joking.
Does it give you a number for like how much value you're adding to your house?
Yes, it does. Yeah.
Okay, it should.
Well, yeah.
There should be a curb appeal modifier that you can see for the garden expansion.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So, yeah, because many people cannot afford to actually remodel their actual house. They can pretend about it.
I mean,
or, you know, own it a out. House.
Oh, right. Yeah, I know. I don't know. A house. I live with my parents.
So. Yeah. No, but I mean, that's part of the reason why I like playing The Sims a lot. It's fun to design a house. Yeah, I'll get in there. I'll design a dream house.
So, did you ever get into any of the similar things? Like, I know there's some sort of car mechanic simulator and stuff like that.
We did. We did a kind of a premium episode about Thief Simulator that was really, really good. I think the episode was fine. Of course, I thought it was good because we put it out. But Thief Simulator is really fun and a surprisingly good game that it is easy to put a lot of time into, more time than you would think. Never did the car simulator or the car mechanic simulator, but American Truck Simulator, we did an Abject Suffering about that, and I knew I had to stay away from it because I would have totally fallen into a hole with it. So.
Is that similar to there's like the whole spin tires thing or whatever? Is that series or related at all or anything?
I think spin tires is a little bit more action heavy. Spin tires is also I think that it is of a similar production value.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Well, which I do not say disparagingly, is just It is of a certain level of polish, red not very much, that I think made it popular with a lot of the same people who liked the Euro Truck Simulator and American Truck Simulator.
So I just finished watching the trailer on mute, and two things that stood out to me that I cannot get over. First off, they have little like plastic kitty houses that you can put in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And less creepily play sets. I don't know why less, but. Like you can design for your children in this video game world. And then the second thing is the final shot of the trailer shows cleaning out kind of a dirty backyard and turning it into like a gym landscape with like, you know, pull up rigs and everything, which is very impressive that they would think to put that in there.
Yeah.
Huh.
That sounds like what I would do if I had a backyard.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And a moat.
Just the assembly of the jungle gyms and stuff like that, and the furniture going through and, you know, clicking on every single bolt to fasten it in.
Yeah, that is nuts.
Oh man.
And bolts.
Wah 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 wah.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what did you ask the nice people?
Yeah, I wanted to know about all the little things that make us so happy, because it's oftentimes those little details in a game that makes it so endearing to us. So that could be something like an idle animation or the design of a loading screen. And so I just asked, what are those little things in games that you've noticed that really, really, like, no one would miss it if it wasn't there? But the fact that it is there makes it so much better.
I saw this question. I haven't read the answers to see if anybody has stolen mine, but this is probably the quickest I came up with exactly what my answer would be. So,
oh boy, now. On this one.
So I'll get us started here with Alex, who writes, across my 1,000 plus hours of play, I grew quite fond of controlling the light tunnel on the loading screens of Phantasy Star Online, across the Dreamcast, Xbox, and PC. David, you played this. What was the light tunnel?
So this is a weird situation where I do not remember at all, but I do remember that was the case. If that makes sense.
Like, was it just like a responsive animation? You know, so when you twiddled the stick, okay.
Yeah, and I can't remember the details, but I do remember that being a thing that, like, you know, when I played on the GameCube, aka the system where, you know, online play will never catch on. So as you might imagine, the loading times were pretty atrocious.
Yeah. Jala, what does Brian say?
Oh, you caught me off guard. I'm so used to being like the last person. Okay, Brian says, I love everything about the way the last word handles and sounds in Destiny, but in particular, the twirling draw animation and the whistle it makes as you do so are absolutely chef kiss.
I'll cut in an example of this for the listeners who may not know what the last word is, aside from Lawrence O'Donnell's show on MSNBC. Yeah. Dennis, you listen to this. Is it a satisfying sound?
Oh, yeah, very much so. The gunfire itself, I didn't find it to be anything special, but they do a little twirl on the reload or, you know, when they've got it out and draw it. And there's a little whew. I mean, you just heard it. So, you know, that's music right there.
Sound design matters.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. David, what does Ollie say?
Ollie says, in the PlayStation 2 / Xbox shooter Black, if you don't fire for a bit, your character checks on your gun in a really natural and normal way. I'm not a gun guy, quote unquote, but it's a nice touch, as I've spent many an idle minute in real life looking at whatever happens to be in my hands while waiting for something.
Black, I remember enjoying Black quite a bit. I have no idea if it holds up yet. It was made by Criterion, the Burnout people, and it felt really, really good to play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, you want some sonic design as well, or some sound design there. That's pretty good. Black is your game. He talks about, you know, doing something in a really natural and normal way, and my mind immediately went to, I just need a game where if you sit still for too long, the character starts chewing on their fingers or fingernails.
That'd be really gross in first person. Checking their cuticles. Let's see. Dennis, what does Casey say?
He says, I think there's something to be said for the original Assassin's Creed in 2007, being able to run around and practice the controls on all the load screens, even if it was a blank Animus space. It was really cool to me and a nice way to pass the time because it predates me having a smartphone to stare at while waiting. Yeah, I remember this load screen blowing my mind because it's diegetic, you know, like you're waiting for things to load in and you can move around within that. So really, really cool idea and way to hide the loading time.
Yeah.
See, what I remember from this is just how much it bothered me, how unbelievably uncoordinated his punching is.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, just like the like sinking of like when and how he throws his punch versus how he's moving his legs is really, really awkward.
Someone didn't do their research when animating that.
Let's see here. Okay, so Namco, for the longest time, owned the patent on loading screen minigames.
Hmm.
And it expired, the patent on that expired in 2015. And I'm surprised that I haven't seen more of them.
Yeah, they should be hidden by now.
Yeah, but then I guess I don't know, like, I don't see a lot of loading screens nowadays. And if I do see them, they end up getting patched out or, you know, shortened because of optimization.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, yeah, that's an interesting design challenge. You need like a WarioWare style game that you can play in the 3 seconds that you're actually loading.
Yep. Let's see. Greg says the Elder Scrolls games do a great job with the locations to make them feel lived in. The sun rises and falls during the course of gameplay and shadows go across the land as they do so. Clouds gather, rain comes and then clears up. Sound effects of animals are heard as you travel, like what we would hear here on Earth if we were going through that area. And townspeople rush about with their business, take time to eat or sleep, and have conversations with one another. All of these effects really help the game worlds to feel alive. Yeah. So not just one, but kind of a collection of details to aid in verisimilitude.
Yeah, and the Elder Scrolls have very much made that their thing. Like, feeling lived in is like their calling card.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's see. Jala, what does Michael say?
Michael says, I love games with NPC side dialogue that responds to character stats. For example, there are some guards in Fallout 4 that will comment on your good looks if you have high charisma.
Oh, nice.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. Yep. Especially because those barks always get really tired as well. So like if it changes as you're growing as a character. Yeah.
Yep.
David, what does Steven say?
He says Doom 2016 has a lot of great little flourishes that give the Doom Slayer a ton of character, but seeing him fist bump a Doom guy bobblehead is probably my favorite.
They do such a good job of making the Doom guy feel real in that world. You know, just the like, yes, he has an anger elemental, but there are those little touches like that. I think that does like it was Mirror's Edge and then Doom 2016 in terms of evolutions in giving the first person player or the first person player character a sense of placement in the world. Dennis, what does Jack say?
Jack says there's no inherent reason Blizzard ever needed to make the barks in Warcraft and Starcraft get funny or annoyed if you repeatedly clicked on a unit. That they did really enhance the game from time to time for me. That's a funny idea.
Yeah.
I didn't know that happened.
Oh yeah. Like if you know, when you click on a guy, it's like, what's the order, boss? And then if you get the fifth time you do.
Poking me.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those things, right? Because you think, okay, that's going to be, maybe something that you do intentionally to see what everybody's annoyance bark is. But like sometimes, often enough, you end up clicking on somebody, like a few too many times and ends up tripping it. It's like they managed to find that line.
Yeah. That's a tightrope to walk of like, delightful to discover, but not so obvious that everyone finds it immediately.
Yes. See also what was a Battlefield game that had the crazy reload animations that triggered.
Oh, that is referenced below.
Oh yeah. Let's see. Jeffrey says all of the aesthetic changes during a game of the Binding of Isaac, they do nothing for gameplay, but increase the game's charm exponentially. Yeah. Especially when you see the horrible things that happen to Isaac as he picks up new items.
Well, and the fact that they stack so well, like, yeah. I don't know if there's a limit on how many different effects can be on him visually at once, but it seems like every item you pick up is kind of stacking and changing him continuously.
Yeah.
Do you know, does it reach a point where just like it's okay, it's carrying as many different little custom animations as it can and it's not going to change anymore?
I have no idea. I don't know that I've ever found the limit, but I'm positive either Gary or Will would be the people who would give you a definitive answer about that.
Yeah, I'll go to Reddit and find Isaac with every item.
Let's see. Jala, what does Will say?
I don't know. I was totally sidetracked by this anime-ass Shadowrun thing. I just dropped it there. Okay. Okay. So who am I reading? Okay. Who was that again?
What? Will.
Will. Okay. All of the menus in Persona 5, every detail moves or is dynamic. The whole visual design is a masterclass.
Yeah. Back when I directed animation, I tried very, very hard to get somebody to heed Persona 5 or the Persona games in general as just like a reference for motion graphics, but it never happened. I think it was too much.
Oh.
Yeah.
See, I always just maintain that, and I will still maintain actually that like animation in menus is a horrible idea because it's just wasting time and detracting from the purpose of a menu, which is to select things.
Mm.
Like I just want no animations, just load as quickly as possible and move between options as quickly as possible.
But if you're going to do it right.
Yes. There was this like long silence and I was waiting for something to happen and nothing happened. So
what was this Shadowrun thing? Like, first off, I didn't know they made a Sega CD Shadowrun game. Why is it like 90s ass anime? Like where did you see this?
I was looking up some images of my response to this question, which is also 90s or late 80s as hell. And as a result, when I was looking in the images, I came across this thing, and it's some anime-ass Shadowrun. I don't know.
Weird.
Hey, the world always needs more Shadowrun.
True enough.
I guess. I don't know.
David, what does Lucas say?
Lucas says, in the much maligned Battlefield Hardline, there was a minuscule chance of you getting a joke reload. My favorite was the one where your guy would pull the empty mag out from the bottom of the gun, only to have a third arm come from off screen and hand him a new one. He'd even go, thanks. I assume that's the voice. That seems like it must have been. Other little touch from that game was the crooks flipping off the cops and swearing at them when you highlighted them with the spot button.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah. Yep. I remember that was one of you. We talked about that on the show when it was discovered that that happens, and just watching the compilation of all of them. Very entertaining.
Yeah. Things that can only happen because of Twitch.
Right. Yep, things that can only happen because there are millions of hours being recorded every single day. Let's see. Dennis, what does Gwillem say?
He says, in the first two Darksiders games, if there's a line that an NPC will repeat over and over, the game will cycle through several different recordings of it rather than just repeat the same one. It's a neat little detail, even though in practice it comes out slightly surreal, because each reading will naturally have slightly different emphasis. The overall effect adds up sounding like you're listening to them rehearse. It's very funny when they start doing it as you're leaving an area, as if they're suddenly having doubts about how well they come across. Try my wares. Try my wares.
Try my wares.
Try my wares.
try my wares.
Though it's not a very successful detail and may even have been just a way to use every part of the voice sessions by not letting the extra takes go to waste, I appreciate that they even gave this consideration. The exact repetition of a line of dialogue is one of those things we've just gotten used to in games, and I enjoy it when devs try to play around with stuff like that. Even when it ends up making it sound like all these magnificent angels and demons have crippling social anxiety. Especially then, maybe. I agree. Yes, that is fantastic.
I'm trying to think. Wasn't there a game like, I'm thinking like circa N64 time or something that, you know, had the generic, you know, RPG like yes and no choices where no was usually the wrong choice that they'd make you try again. But it was something like the game had like basically something like 200 responses to like you choosing a dumb choice and would just like step through them one after the other, however many you got to.
Yeah, that doesn't ring a bell, but I believe it happens. Yeah. I think this also, so a version of this happens in Grand Theft Auto games. You know, if you have to restart a mission, they will have alternate lines that they will use that effectively communicate the same thing. But I think that that is done to mitigate any annoyance that might come from, you know, doing a drive to a mission again.
Yeah, no, Destiny actually does that with their raids. Mm-hmm. And those ones can actually differ fairly significantly.
Yeah. So on one hand, I want to say, cool, that's a good, nice little touch that makes life easier. What would make life a lot easier is designing your game in such a way that you don't have to repeat dead air sections of your game.
Yeah. Maybe.
There is ameliorating the problem, and then there is saying, oh, there's no reason we have to do this.
But, I mean, everyone plays GTA for its amazing driving physics.
David writes, I love a home base in games. In Suikoden 2, every time you return to your base after being away for a while, it's so fun to walk around and explore all of the changes. There was also a cooking mini game that was the funniest thing to me at the time. Yeah. I love a home base in a game too.
That sounds like the sequel to the first game.
What?
There's, haven't you played I Love a Home Base in a Game? Yeah, I also played I Love a Home Base in a Game, too.
I didn't realize that.
It's like, what is it? A garden flipper just for game home bases.
Yep. Oh, Jesus. Add a credenza, which credenza. Doesn't make any sense because you don't, like, credenzas don't go outside, Cole. You dummy. You absolute moron.
Credenza. Okay. Sorry. It's a fun word.
It is.
Okay.
It's a really good word.
I'm off the rails today. Joel says, I find the little touches in items that make the space feel real. One of my favorite examples was finding the box of VHS tapes and Gone Home. And remembering I had recorded several of the same shows on scruffy looking VHS tapes.
Yep. And you would scratch out on the label whatever was on there before. Yeah.
Yep.
I still have a few of those because I cannot stand to throw anything away. Help. and then David finally here. What does Dan say?
Dan says the sticky mulch that oozes out of the fridge in RE7. Gross, but also very cool.
Yep, the kitchens in that game are fucking horrifying.
Yay! Like,
yeah, that's... Wait, there's multiple kitchens?
Yeah, it's a big house. So it's like a compound of houses, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the main one that everybody knows from the demo and the intro is the grossest, but all of them have their own nice little touches.
Hooray.
Yeah. I'll do mine, and mine is really quick. So the original Splinter Cell was one of the first games that I played that wasn't Halo on the Xbox. And I remember being enamored of one particular little detail. An early level features a freezer, like a big industrial freezer. And much like, you know, what happened, you know, in a freezer that people were going into and out of, pretty often, they had the rubber flaps that hang down to separate the space, you know, but still keep the but still keep the cold air separated from the warm air.
Yeah.
And so when Sam Fisher walked through those rubber flaps, they would move realistically. There was no reason for them to do that. Except I think maybe just to show that video games had reached a level of fidelity where you could simulate floppiness. But I don't know that I'd ever seen floppiness in a game like that. So proceed me ignoring the mission for what had to be like 15 minutes, just like going through it at different speeds and watching like how long it continued flopping around. After it was the most mind-blowing thing I'd ever seen, you know. And that game at the time, you know, it was a graphical powerhouse. You know, it was all about the, you know, the light and the shadow and, you know, really realistic textures and normal mapping and all of these gee whiz style things. But these floppy flaps just completely entranced me. Yeah, so that's mine.
I remember exactly what you're talking about.
That's great.
Yeah. Jala, how about you?
Well, so I can tell you about one first off that was not impressive to me. Remember when I was rambling about Dishonored 2 and the roaches on the floor and how crappy they were because they were flat and then they were like going in these predictable patterns over and over again?
It was like nobody an animated texture. Yeah.
Yeah. And nobody else was looking at those damn roaches except for me. And I was just like, this is bullshit. I was very upset about those. I was very, very upset about
if I recall, you kept on posting like videos and GIFs, yes. Like, I'm going to blow this wide open.
Well, I mean, like, you know, the thing is when I play a game and it's a game that, you know, like, is like I've got easy access to do such a thing. Yeah, I will totally sit there and commentate on it I'm not streaming. And then people are like, you know, responding to me and I'm still kind of like quasi streaming, but not really, because people are responding to me on Twitter about whatever the hell I just posted. Right. So it's like my lazy version of trying to stream. So, and I was doing that for a while. So, well, anyway, that's one that was unimpressive. Now, one that was impressive, and this is why I fell into a hole. I was pulling up images of Popful Mail. So, Popful Mail, I've talked about many times before, It is this old-ass Sega CD game that was like a PC 88 game or something like that originally. So, I mean, it was around a long, long time and had several incarnations. I only played the Sega CD version of it, but it is this very, very basic fantasy adventure thing that has like platforming and magic and all different kinds of stuff. But it's really fun, and it's this little, role-playing action RPG thing. And it was one of the first times that I saw animated portraits that the mouths would move, you know, and their faces and everything about the portrait would move as they were talking. And, you know, it was more responsive than any of the other things I'd seen before. Like, I'd seen anime, you know, portraits or like, you know, hand-drawn portraits of a person, and maybe the mouth would move, you know, when they were talking, but it wasn't, you know, the expressions changing and, you know, them shifting around a little bit and all of that kind of thing. Not like this. And the little sprites are super charming, and the animations throughout the entire game are just great. There's little cutscenes and, you know, lots of little details. And so, like, there's a bunch of things about this game that were just really, really charming. And definitely, because it was such a stock standard kind of silly RPG game, you know, the best thing about it was, you know, the attention to all the little details and the fact that you could play this little, flying monster guy, which reminded me of the little monster that you can play in Legacy of the Wizard that I also love from the NES and stuff like that. So, you know, like it was just like kind of a callback to some stuff that I enjoyed, but it also just had a lot of love and care put into it. You could tell that the creator of this game, you know, really, really loved what they were doing with it and really loved these characters and this, you know, silly story. And it just comes across in such a way that it was just wonderful. And also, it was released by Working Designs, who also would put their heart and soul into everything that they were doing. So, you know, it just, the care showed quite a bit in, you know, the release of this game. And it's one that I definitely have a special place for in my heart. And when I was looking for that, I also found that it also apparently has a special place in other people's hearts, because I found random things like a Sonic Popful crossover drawing, and then somebody did a mashup video of Dead or Alive and Popful Mail for some reason. I don't know. So, those are things that exist in the world. I am not the only person still thinking about this game.
I don't know. I don't believe it exists.
So anyway, yeah, that would be my answer.
Nice. Yeah, there's something about those small details in sprite art from that era that feel really impressive in a way that feels just like it hasn't been repeated.
And, you know, I say that, but also another one that would be a more recent example would be A Bird Story. That game is all about the details and the flow and everything like that. And it's a very short but very charming game that's also a sprite game. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see here. David, how about you?
So this one's going to be one that I know I'm going to miss. Some that I kick myself for. I really love, attention to details with like guns and other weapons. Any game that, you know, lets you, load an extra round in the chamber, bonus points if you have to do it manually, or, games that, will actually simulate like, things like single action, double action, or, take advantage of some of the like weird, loading schemes that have been, used in various guns.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, so, I know, go on.
David, you will probably appreciate, if you didn't notice already, the image for this multiplayer is from Battlefield World War II. Mm-hmm. And it's when you've got that double barrel shotgun and you fire only one shell and then reload. Animation, he places, he places his thumb over the unfired shell. Yeah. So, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Stuff like that. I remember there's a really obscure one in the first Metro game where it's like the way you're shot, you have like a revolver style shotgun, but something like the way it's set up, you can only reload half the rounds at a time. You know, so just things like that. I'd love to see more games bring back the not just like magically emptying your half full magazines into your inventory pool. So yeah, stuff like that. And then also similarly stuff like that with martial arts, like you know, Warframe has, you know, some really good really on point depictions of martial arts. Similarly, I love the fact that in Neo, or however the hell that's pronounced.
Yep, Neo.
Okay. You know, just all of the weapons are, the way your character moves is very, very typical of Japanese martial arts.
Yeah. Like, you like it when they've very clearly done the research.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I think all of the knives in the Splinter Cell games are actually knives.
Huh.
So.
Nice. Cool.
Yeah.
And then Dennis, round us out.
Yeah, mine is easy. It is the loading screen, screen for Devil May Cry 3.
Loading screen. I'm sorry.
The living screen. The custom living screen. No, the loading screen for Devil May Cry 3, where you could use the attack and gun buttons to beat up the logo. And if you really mashed buttons, you could actually break the logo before the game loaded. And that was always so much fun.
It's like the intro to Vector Man. It drops Vector Man onto the Sega logo. You can run around and shoot at the Sega logo. And if you hit an off-screen power-up, it lets you... it lets you activate like the nuclear hyper weapon, and that will actually let you just completely destroy the logo. And that is my story about Vector Man. I hope you liked it.
I did. I enjoyed it.
So that reminds me, actually, one of my favorite ones that kind of a little bit annoyed me about the DMC remake. Probably the only thing that actually annoyed me is the original depiction of like Ebony and Ivory was really neat, because if you actually looked at the guns, they were, you know, they weren't copies of each other. One was modified for long range combat, while the other was modified for short range.
Okay.
And so they had like different types of triggers and sights and stuff like that. And
did that have gameplay impact?
Not for the most part, no. Only other, with the only exception being things like if you did like a charge attack, which only used one gun, or if you had your like sword equipped, you would still have one of the guns out, and it was always the long range version, which kind of made sense with that. But other than that, no real gameplay thing.
Yeah.
But. And then DMC decided to just go with, like, generic amorphous demon guns because wah, wah, wah.
Don't you dare talk bad about DMC.
Well, if you want to bring that up.
guys.
We can talk.
We need to still have a show, like, by the end of the show, so we need to not.
I'm just waiting for Jala to get Devil May Cry 5. I mean, that's a whole season's worth of table flippings.
Oh, we'll be talking about it in a little bit.
Okay,
oh,
yeah. Boy. All right. cool. Well, that was a good question, Dennis. Thank you, everybody, for your good answers to that good question. If you would like to participate in these in the future, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons.
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the games that we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Dennis, now that you've been let out of the cistern, what have you been playing?
Yeah, I've been playing a bunch, actually. I talked about Apex Legends the last time I was on, and it was pretty fresh. I've continued to really, really enjoy it, and I've also started stat tracking it. So you see these little banners at the end of every game that kind of tell you how you and your teammates did. And in addition to those and a couple other stats on like what character I chose and where I dropped, etc., I've just started doing a little recording in Excel at the beginning and end of every game.
Oh, nice.
To follow my stats. And it's about 50 games deep right now. And I look forward to the point at which it's, 200, 300, 1,000, why not, games deep.
Right.
To start analyzing, like, how do I perform versus my counterparts on the squad? How do I perform as certain heroes versus others? Is Runoff really the best place to drop? Hint, yes, it is. Runoff is my favorite place to drop. But yeah, it's just very interesting. The game has gotten backlash for so many things. One of the minor things it's gotten backlash for is it makes stats for your characters pretty opaque. You can unlock stat trackers that you can add to your banner, and that's kind of cool to show off to your squad mates. But there's no way for you to just go in and look at how many kills have I gotten as this hero.
Weird.
So tracking that on my own is my little FU to Respawn. JK, Respawn, I love your game. And
you don't owe them anything.
Yeah, I do. certainly not after they announced the battle pass, but that's such a meme that I don't think it's worth talking about here. Okay. Yeah. But so I'm kind of nerding out. I found a way to get spreadsheets into Battle Royale, and it makes me so happy.
Two great days.
I'm even tracking like which game in a session it is to look at like how long does it take me to warm up, if that makes any sense. Or nice. I should be tracking like time at night that I'm playing, because I've definitely noticed I'll get towards the end of a run and it's late at night and my placements just start getting worse and worse. It's like, okay, clearly I need to stop playing.
Clearly there is an optimal time.
Yeah, but the other thing though is it adds a little bit of extra weight to every game, because you can think like, okay, I'm driving my average up or down with this game.
Yeah.
And that's kind of fun.
That doesn't stress you out?
No, I love that kind of stuff. I'm this weird, insane person who... I'm not hyper competitive, but I love having, numbers associated with things.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not very competitive, and I have trouble getting super mad if I lose. So I think I'm in a healthy place with it, but I just love kind of having data is nice.
Yeah.
So you talk about, tracking your stats with various characters. However, so far I don't think I've seen anyone play as anyone other than the chick with the weird spiky hair.
Yes, Wraith. She is a Cancer. She is everywhere. But I play as Lifeline, which is the objectively good option.
Well, you're always going to have a place on a squad.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I have to think there's something in the matchmaking that it takes into consideration either who you main or who you have selected. You can select which character like you show up as to other players before you do character select.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to imagine it matches based on that, because the number of times where, I'm picking second or third, the number of times where I've had to play as someone other than Lifeline, someone picks her out from under me, has been minuscule. I think maybe 3 out of 50 games I've had to switch to another character, which is super interesting. And it might just be because people can see if you place your token over Lifeline, it's like, hey, I want to play. And most people will oblige. But I the internet is not that nice. Like, I know the internet's not that nice. There has to be something else going on.
No.
Yeah. I don't intend to buy the battle pass for anyone who's curious.
Can you give me like a 2-sentence description of what the battle pass is?
Fortnite style unlocks where you pay money up front, and then the more you play, the better stuff you get, and you kind of have an inside track that has more loot. The loot is just not good enough. Like, it's not anywhere near good enough.
Is it paid?
Although that strikes me as being like the ideal way to handle monetization.
From an ethical standpoint, I think so. Yeah. Like there's nothing wrong with it. It's just that so there's nothing wrong with the way they're doing it, but the value equation within it is not good enough for me.
Sure.
If that makes any sense.
No.
There are skins for characters that are so much better than the stuff that's coming in the battle pass that I can still aspire to. And the only reason I could see anyone wanting the stuff in the battle pass is because they already have everything in the game. And they want something new and shiny. So it seems for the whales, if you will.
I just wish more games would start, you know, charging for games.
Yeah. Be like nice, I said, the format, yeah, the format is fine. The content is not good enough for me.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So that's Apex Legends. And I, at some point, I'm sure I'll share the stats that I'm collecting. We're starting a new season here tomorrow. So tomorrow as of this recording. So that's a whole new column of data I need to start adding, et cetera. I have also picked up, as I mentioned, Devil May Cry 5.
I'm curious about this because the reception has been resoundingly positive, which is not what I expected.
It is a Devil May Cry ass Devil May Cry game. I had to go watch a reminder video for who the hell Nero was. So, you know, they're sticking with that choice.
Well, that's kind of like which version.
Yeah. I'd say more about that.
Well, I'm sorry. I'm thinking of your brother in the game. What's his name?
Virgil. No,
yeah,
this is not.
Yeah, no, Nero. Yeah, why are they bringing Nero back?
I don't know. I mean, it's fine, and the way this game plays is sublime. It also has the effect, and I can't imagine that they were thinking about it on this level, but maybe that when I'm hoping I haven't gotten there yet, but when you do get to Dante, when you do get to play as him, and I know it's coming, it's going to feel super special and like you've arrived.
Aren't fans of the series, just every time we say Nero, replace that with like Raiden, and
like he was controversial because in DMC4 you played like the first half of the game going through each level as Nero, and the second half was doing those levels backwards as Dante. Is that correct?
I don't remember well enough to say the order. I know you played the first half as Nero, second half as Dante, or maybe went back and forth. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Dante was introduced later on, for the one of you who's not familiar, the main protagonist of Devil May Cry.
Yeah, but they played appreciably different from each other.
Yeah, particularly like the gun. Nero has this kind of big hand cannon, whereas Dante has the rapid fire dual pistols. Though both of them seem incredibly similar when you hold them up to the new character for Devil May Cry, titled simply V. And V is Adam Driver a la Star Wars.
So he has a weird torso?
In a leather corset, yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Like, look up a picture of him. It is Adam Driver in like a kinky leather corset. With all of the moodiness and brooding of Kylo Ren down to the level of reading poetry during fights. It is hilarious. His character in like cutscenes and how he fits into the story, I don't mind his character. Like anyone that didn't like DMC, sorry, Jala, is going to rage against V.
V looks like he was imported from that aesthetic.
Yes, very much so. However, I have problems with him, not on that front, but on the gameplay front. So I have gotten to him in the game, and you get to play as him before you get to play as Dante. And I don't get him yet. And maybe that's just me, and maybe I'll come back in a couple weeks and really, really love him. But the kind of core idea is that you as V are very weak and fragile, and you have these demon summons fight for you. And so whereas Nero and I think Dante, you're up in everyone's business, you are hack and slashing, wading through enemies. With V, you try to position yourself kind of on the back line and make sure that your summons are between you and the enemy. And you're still directly controlling your summons. So, you know, triangle where it would swing Nero's sword has V's panther clawing. And square where it would fire Nero's gun has V's rooster, crow. Everyone in the game calls him a chicken, demon chicken.
Like cockatrice.
Firing lightning. So it's kind of effectively the same thing, but you're trying to keep your distance. And I don't like that. And it gets awkward because now you're trying to see something where the detail is kind of on the other side of the room. And for a game that is all about kind of noticing the enemy's attack patterns and being able to kind of react at just the right time, V feels like it doesn't have any of that, because as long as you stay back, you're not in danger, and you're not really worried about countering or protecting your summons.
Hmm.
So it just, the system feels weird. You've got a double trigger, and you can summon in this huge abomination nightmare creature to fight for you, and that's cool. Like that's a really cool effect, especially because he comes into the game in different ways. So V will snap his fingers, and then there will be a second pause where you're like, "Where is he? Where is he?" And then he'll either like burst up from the ground or like drop from the sky. Like yeah. literally just like body slam an enemy from out of nowhere. Like he skydived in to land on him. And you know, he has lasers and explosions. It's pretty sweet. It's very Devil May Cry, but at least at first you don't directly control him. And that element of removal, breaks my enjoyment of V right now.
Hmm.
I will say the last time I played, there was a boss fight. I was really sucking it up with V, trying to figure out what I was doing wrong. And I tried playing with him a little bit closer, a little more up in the action. And that at least dealt with the visual problem of not really being able to see what was going on. I don't know if I was more effective, but I felt more in control.
Yeah.
So maybe that's it. And the next time I play, I'm going to be experimenting with that more. But yeah. The next mission switches over to Nero again. And so I'll see V when I see him.
Do they keep the the sort of limbo thing for the that aesthetic from DMC? Because that was probably my favorite change they made to the game, was just that weird kind of abstraction of the area you're actually in.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's absent of that. And it's a new game, a completely new take on what demons look like. And they went bugs. And I can't get excited about that. So that's a major letdown from DMC, is the enemy design is just not there. And it might just be because DMC was so good that anything else is going to pale in comparison. But
yeah, right.
Hey now.
Again, we have to have a show after this.
I was waiting for that. I knew that one was going to trigger you. that doesn't do it for me. But it's you're fighting like praying mantis style bug creatures.
Like you gotta hand it to him for like coming up with a whole new type of character, especially with a series that's been going on for 16 years.
Yeah,
you know,
no, it's an experiment.
Yeah,
they tried something. And I like his character against all odds.
Yeah,
I should say at least he doesn't annoy me, because like I thought he would the first time I saw his image. And I think maybe this is it. Devil May Cry for me lies perfectly on the line between action game and fighting game. Mm-hmm. Now, I know it's an action-ass action game, but for most action games, the time spent learning the combos and everything is fairly simple, and you kind of get it. And in a fighting game, I'm just lost, where I know mechanical errors are going to forever haunt me. Devil May Cry is challenging to learn everything and get the timing down. And it's also challenging to kind of hold all the possibilities in your mind, but I know I can get there.
Right.
And that feels especially good when it's like, okay, well, this fight I did really well with my sword, but I kind of forgot to use my guns. And then the next fight you do really well with your sword and guns, but you kind of forgot you have a devil trigger, like a robo arm you can use as Nero. And then the next fight you remember to use all three, but you didn't once do a dodge. And then you start you can assemble three or four pieces of the puzzle at once. And the real fun of the game is when you start being able to click all of them into place in a single fight.
Yeah.
Maybe I just have a built-up vocabulary for that on Nero from all the previous games, and because he is of the two closer to Dante, that I have not developed for V yet. So it's not a final judgment, but it's not working for me yet.
Yeah. Jala is flooding our private channel with images of V, and I can't tell if it is admiration for the aesthetic or her laughing at us on mute.
No, I mostly am just like, this is an emo ass motherfucker.
It is anciently emo.
Well, and the thing is that I had actually, right before we started the show, come across one of the cosplayers that I follow has already bust out a cosplay of this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had seen that like a little bit before we started the show, and I didn't know who the hell V was until, you know, this one over here of the Devil May Cry persuasion decided to comment, and that's why I was like, okay, now I need to pull it up. So, yeah.
I mean, he's got a cane and mandals. How much more emo can you get?
Yeah, I feel like most of the cosplayers you follow would have to lose about 30 pounds in order to cosplay as V.
Oh, no, this particular cosplayer is like a super scrawny white boy who is super emo. So, like, this character is one of his favorite characters, but it fits his usual stees, so it works.
Sure.
So.
Nice.
Yeah, so a lot of verbiage on the characters and the, you know, all that. The game plays like classic Devil May Cry, and I'm loving every second of that, as long as I'm in Nero's shoes.
One of the reviews I read, though, was saying it was fairly easy, which normally I associate the Devil May Cry games with just being brutally, brutally difficult.
Yeah, so there's Human, Devil Hunter, Son of Sparta, Dante Must Die, Heaven and Hell, Hell and Hell are all the difficulty levels.
Oh, good lord.
So you start Human and Devil Hunter are available. Devil Hunter doubles the health of enemies and the damage enemies deal from Human. Then whatever comes next, Son of Sparta doubles that, and then Dante Must Die doubles that. In addition, more enemies spawn. They spawn in different, more challenging patterns. And I found out from a review, and this is cool, bosses get new attack patterns, even at the higher difficulties.
Cool. Oh, that's
which
cool.
which is really, really a creative way to go about this versus just having a thicker meat wall. So that's how those stack up. I started on Devil Hunter, which is the hardest available at the beginning, and I agree. It's not killing me. But I also have a long history with the series, and I have two more difficulty levels, which are literally going to be exponentially more difficult.
Yeah, because I mean, traditionally in the series, Dante Must Die mode was more or less a single shot would kill you.
Yeah, so with I think it's Devil May Cry 4, they went to Heaven and Hell, which is both you and enemies die in one touch. And you only get three respawns per level.
Wow.
And then Hell in Hell is the hardest, where you are subject to dying in one touch and everyone else has the normal Son of Sparta, I think, difficulty. Huh. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to getting there. That's part of why I play these games. The difficulty curve so far, I can say, is more forgiving. I don't know what the upper limit of difficulty is going to dole out.
Yeah, I'm a little disappointed just strictly from a like tradition standpoint that it sounds like they got rid of was it easy auto difficulty.
Oh no, that's there where you just mash one button and it does all the cool combos.
Yeah, but do they still unlock it for you if you do bad enough? It's like I don't know, maybe this was just Devil May Cry 1, but like that was actually an unlockable if you like died a certain number of times.
I remember that pang of shame.
I hate it when games do that.
Pushing the swimmies across the table towards you. You need this, honey.
Oh, nice.
Well, that sure is the thing.
Yeah. The final thing I'll say is I had someone gift me The Division 2. They had gotten a free code for it at like a promotion.
Oh, yeah.
And I can get it to run on my computer, but I cannot get it to run well enough to be playable on my computer, fortunately.
Womp, womp.
So I spent all the time installing and loading in and creating a character only to have it be a mess.
Hey, Dennis, are you going to be streaming Devil May Cry?
Yes, I did the first time, and I plan to in the future.
Well, I probably missed your announcement.
Yeah.
Or I was busy. I don't know.
Let you know.
I'm happy you're enjoying it.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks. Me too.
Can I do mine?
Yeah.
Let's do mine. So I've got three things, one of which I share with you, Jala, so we can segue. I'm going to do the non-segue ones first. So first, talking about something old. I picked Plague Inc. back up.
Oh, yeah. That game.
Yes. Plague Inc., the strategy management game where you are a virus and you are trying to kill everybody on Earth by evolving. It simulates, you know, people moving around and travel, and different countries have different, you know, conditions, be it weather, be it economic, and, you know, you can pick different kinds of diseases, be it bacteria or, you know, viruses or, you know, like super weapons or brain worms and things like that. I'd like, it's kind of crazy that this game has been out for as long as it has. But has kind of always been kind of this constant companion for me because it's really good on the iPad. I picked it up this time because they recently did an update where they add in scenarios, which are just basically a bunch of little gimmick missions that you can do with particular kind of variances on the, you know, regular world simulation that they run. So like, to give an example, and one that was kind of in the news and got a little bit of controversy was one of the scenarios they added was science denial. Specifically, you know, how does this work if anti-vaxxers run the world, right? You know, and there's a lot of like flavor text about that, but like, yeah,
it's easy mode.
I mean, kinda. However, it is like most of these are not really what you expect. So, you know, you go in and you pick your country and you get lots of, you know, little like news crawlers about like, you know, another expert found and hanged or something like that. However, after a short little while of this thing going out, all of the world's experts and scientists get together in a particular country. And that is going to be the country that is that is funding most of the research for the cure. So like, basically, this one took me forever to win because the country that they take that they take refuge in is randomized most of the time.
Oh, okay.
And you know, based on where you start, your virus is adapted for certain conditions, and it only spreads to different places if you design it to go to that place. So like, the disease won't go to Greenland if it's not adapted for colder climates, right? You know, and like aridity and humidity are there. So like, you will be charting your path based on like, okay, how do I infect as many people as possible? If you do not immediately pivot and start putting your points into stuff that will let you target the country that is doing all the research, they'll research the cure super quickly. So yes, like in the flavor text, it's super easy in the early going, but like, if you do not act very quickly, you can still win because you get complacent.
So there's an inflection point.
Yes. It's still,
it sounds like it's basically the Australia strategy from Risk.
I mean, kinda, but they already have that, right? Like Madagascar and Greenland are already like really, really difficult, right? Just because of their ports. And because they tend to lock down at the drop of a hat, etc. But they've got a bunch of them that are like really interesting. Like one of them is like, what if Mad Cow came back? And you start out with a certain like array of symptoms that are just like baked in. And part of one of your winning strategies for a regular kind of Plague Inc. run is to put all of your points into infectivity early on, and spread without people noticing. Basically, you want to be, you want to remain asymptomatic until enough people are carriers that you can drop the hammer, right? Well, it's,
wait, isn't that like not how like biology works?
I mean, so the developer in talking about the way evolution works, it'd be like in humanity, if one kid was born with a third arm, every human spontaneously would grow a third arm, you know? So it's not like a perfect simulation, you know, it still has to be a game, but you know, you want to try and keep your symptoms, you know, tamped down, and like, you will mutate symptoms, but you want to remain below notice. Even if some symptoms let you spread more quickly, because if people notice you, they're going to start working on a cure, or worse than anything, lock down their ports, so that, you know, infectivity basically falls through the floor. I forget what I was saying with that. So like with Mad Cow, you can ultimately choose different things for the prion to spread through. So like as people stop eating beef, like, well, screw you. I'm in plants now. Have fun eating that rice and broccoli, you dipshit. but yeah, you know, you still have to like navigate really cannily because they're going to notice you and start working on a cure very quickly. So it's just like a bunch of like little things like that, right? They've got, you know, global warming, global cooling. They've got one that I just did today, which has you playing as the brain worms. So the Nurax worms, which in the regular campaign has you basically trying to modify everybody's behavior to where everybody accepts the worm because it is part of a unified consciousness. You know,
yes.
However, in this scenario, the world has outlawed fun and specifically outlawed Christmas cheer. So,
okay.
So you are a brainworm that has teamed up with Santa to infect the world and, teach the society how to have a good Christmassy time. So all of the symptoms.
Do they make war on Christmas jokes?
I didn't see, you know, you can't always watch the news ticker, but you know, it's kind of like, oh yeah, like just, all television has been made into the news is like one of the things that they do, but you're evolving symptoms. Like, okay, instead of having coughing or sneezing or stuff like that, it is, you know, just like different forms of euphoria. So it's like friendship, you know, people get more social, right? All travel is locked down, but if you, you can make an evolution to get people to start sharing more selfies on social media, which says like, oh, people need to travel there to see it. So through social media, you get countries to open up their ports of entry. So that people will start traveling around. It's just a bunch of like cool shit like that. That is, you know, that takes the base gameplay and adds all these little challenge modes, and it's super neat. And, you know, if we're not very much extra, like it's just a little extra piece of DLC, this is really satisfying to play as somebody who has kind of followed along with the development of this game for a while.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
How long has this been out in total?
I think it released in 2011.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Yep. I think it's like one guy too, or a very small team that does it.
See, I don't think I could play this. Just way, way too, I don't know, too depressing and something I already worry about enough.
Wait, is he charging for the new content?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. I was going to say, we found the Hello Sky model. God, No Man's Sky. Yeah. Hello Games.
Hello Sky. the other thing, and this can be real quick because this is a very complex game and I don't know how much detail I should really go into, but in my search for a build and manage game that is as stressful and miserable as Frostpunk, I have settled on and started really enjoying Surviving Mars.
Okay.
Nice. Yeah.
Strategy game that came out last year where you are trying to establish a Mars colony and kind of create a safe and healthy place for people to live and also make it economically sustainable. either through like, you know, luring people in, not luring makes it sound sinister, but attracting new people to join the mission and mining resources to send back to Earth. So it is not strictly as miserable as Frostpunk because it is inherently, at least the scenarios that I've played, very optimistic. But you know, you're still on Mars and dealing with dust storms and things like that, but it is a very complex game, and it works. That I think works in its favor. But it also, I can see like it, like when I initially tried playing this, it made me bounce off because it was very, very poorly tutorialized. When I picked it back up this time, they had added tutorial missions to kind of explain kind of how the drones worked more than anything, the things that do most of the manual labor for you, and you know, build like the allocating those and specifically like creating enough coverage for them to do what they're going to do is a little bit counterintuitive if you haven't played a lot of games like this. And by that point, I really hadn't when I played it last year. Now I feel like I have a pretty good grasp on it. It's kind of neat because the game has two distinct phases where, you know, the initial phase is unmanned. Like what you're trying to do is establish enough resources and basically an infrastructure for life support, you know, setting up evaporators and, you know, things that will scrub oxygen and stuff like that, and then building the domes that the colonists are ultimately going to inhabit. The individual colonists, they have a lot of stats and a lot of like preferences to them. So when you're bringing somebody in, it's not just like, oh, is this person an engineer? Is this, you know, is this a person who's like a botanist or what have you? Like, they have their own individual kind of like wants and proclivities, and you end up like wanting to filter for them both their upsides and downsides or their quirks to make sure they're going to be a good fit.
Is this like Dwarf Fortress level?
I don't know if it's Dwarf Fortress level. It's very akin to that. Or Rimworld would be a pretty similar comparison as well. Yeah. So those individual traits matter more than something in, say, Frostpunk, where some of that is modeled, but it's more diagnostic as opposed to determinative. Like in Frostpunk, it doesn't really matter if somebody who is lazy works at the coal mine. Everybody kind of has their shit together because they need to have their shit together. In this, you want to kind of make sure that the right people are going to be in the right places, and they gave you the controls to do it. Aesthetically, it is a very beautiful game, and I love the soundtrack to it. It is kind of like simultaneously like retro sci-fi cheesy, but also very chill. Mm-hmm. And it sets a perfect mode for it. So yeah, Surviving Mars is really good.
These robots are Wall-E levels of cute.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was looking at it. It looks, it does look upbeat for, you know, a game this stressful.
So guidance counselor Cole, what would you advise the lazy person go do?
There are jobs that are not necessary for their survival, right? Like you end up, you know, needing services in the domes, right? So you can build, you know, bars, casinos, things like that. You do have the ability to, you know, like, so you have to provide food for people, and there are tons of resources that you have to manage in this. It's great. But you have to provide food for people. You can't really just build a farm though. You have to build like a grocery store because, I mean, people from Earth are not used to going directly to a farm and just grabbing an ear of corn, right? Having a store for somebody to work at, you know, somebody who, you know, doesn't necessarily have a specialization.
And you need someone in front of that store holding a sign.
I can't they get a pull for that sign? I'm not necessarily trying to like cast a judgment on people, but like there are lower stakes jobs than like the person who makes sure the colony has oxygen. You know, where somebody who is, you know, kind of has a less than ideal set of traits can work and still and be a benefit and not a drag, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's great. I like the game quite a bit. I have not gotten to the point where like the colonists are having children yet, but that's something you have to factor in, which is, you know, like you got kids and they've, you know, like you need replacement. You need to educate them and bring new people up, you know, with their own specialties. I also haven't really gotten too far into like expanding across the map and setting up like supply lines or specializing domes very much. So this can go a long way down, and they've already added an expansion, which adds like rival colonies that you can have as well. So you end up having like resource grabs. I'm not sure if they added warfare yet. It'd be real fucked up for the tone that they've established so far. Yeah.
This is making me think of Terraforming Mars, the board game.
Oh, yeah.
And I know Ben has experience with that. So if you like this for long enough, I wonder how much the two obviously thematically go together, mm-hmm. but how much the two from a gameplay standpoint would reflect each other.
Yeah. I talked with him on the phone over the weekend and I recommended the game to him. So he is it is on his radar. Yeah. So that's me. I've also been playing Resident Evil 6 with Jala. That's right. It's back, baby.
Yeah. That game that wasn't like part of the podcast for about a full year straight.
Greatest Resident Evil game ever made.
I've got to take exception to that. It's a good Resident Evil game.
Cole, if I can let the DMC shots pass, you can let that one pass.
I'm not angry about it. I just need to make sure.
I'm not angry. I'm just disappointed.
No, I'm not disappointed.
I just need to fix this motherfucker.
I would say I let a lot more of your commentary pass without saying anything than.
I didn't realize we were all keeping score. I thought things were better.
Talk about it. Let's,
Wait,
have you been on this podcast?
I guess what I'm saying is I was very polite in the way I negated your opinion, David.
I went aggro there for the lulls. I'm sorry. Continue.
So Jala and I, we've been talking about doing this for a while, and we finally decided to do it. We streamed Leon's campaign in RE6 over the weekend. Given how much we've said about Resident Evil 6, I don't know how much detail it bears to go into, but I had a really good time.
Yeah, it's been fun. Yeah. So one bonus of me hosting the game, because of the, we started out and there were some technical issues because this one particular NPC kept on getting hung up on a chair and we restarted twice and it wouldn't stop. Uh-huh. And I'd never seen that happen before. So I was like, Cole, how about you let me host the game and then you do all the streaming and stuff, but let me host it. Yeah. And then that fixed it.
Yeah.
So, that was a first. So we ended up playing through the very beginning of the game a few times before we finally were able to progress past that.
It was pretty funny, though.
But a perk of me hosting the game is that since I've played this game many, many, many times, I had my entire arsenal. I didn't even have an option when I loaded the game up of whether or not I wanted to carry over all my weapons or not. It just assumed I did. Mm-hmm. And so Cole, you said that you had a bunch of guns too. You apparently got access to my arsenal as well.
I don't know if I had access to your exact arsenal. Oh, okay. I don't remember starting out with a shotgun that early, in those early things. So it's hard to tell. Also, it had been 6 years since I played the game. So
yeah. I don't remember because I very often end up, whoever I play with very often picks the main character and then I end up playing the side character. So that means that for Leon, I've played Leon all of maybe one time that I've played the game.
Yeah.
And the rest of the time I have always been Helena, not that I like her, but because that is who I had to play. I had already played through.
You very much do not like Helena.
Like Helena.
Is she she's the only one that I would really think would call a side character? Who would be the other two?
So Pierce would be Chris's side character, and Sherry is Jake's side character.
That particular thing does not make sense because the main character and all and Leon and Chris are the ones that have been veteran characters, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this other one is the secondary character is always a newbie. So Sherry is definitely a veteran character.
Yeah.
But Jake
she's
the main
also
character.
The competent one of the two.
except that everybody in the world has to save Sherry in this game.
Yeah. I'm happy you raised that, Jala, because that has bothered me.
Bothered me for a very long time literally everybody has to save Sherry at some point in this game, sometimes more than once.
It bothers me that Sherry gets second billing.
Every group has a Sherry, and if you don't know who the Sherry in the group is, you're the Sherry.
And I like Jake as a character, but it just seems more or less a sexist move to take the character that's been in the series for a long time and put her as second shrift because this is a Wesker character and this is a dude. Yeah.
But it was good. It was fun. So first off, I'd never done this co-op before. And it's good to play co-op with somebody B stream with somebody I feel we had a good back and forth on it. It was entertaining and fun. It was fun streaming it because I feel there were a good number of people who kind of knew the reputation of kind of where the game went, but kind of maybe didn't know or believe the extent of it.
Didn't know how far they went there.
Just wait until we get to Chris's campaign. They're going to have a complete fit.
Yeah, and I like freaking out the squares in that way, so we're gonna be doing it over the next couple of weekends.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, yeah. It's been fun. And I have had people comment that they enjoy our back and forth playing the game as well.
Cool.
So that's been cool. And, like, yeah, I possess a fairly decent memory about stuff, but there are a few things that apparently changed. There was a very funny part where I was like, hey, Cole, by the way, anytime that I gave Cole any kind of an advice, I would immediately not do the thing and then, like, die or whatever. and then upon repeat, Cole might flub it again, but I didn't flub it more than once. But, like, right after I say the thing, I am cursed to immediately fall prey to it, after which time then everything proceeds normally. So that was entertaining. But there was this one part where I could have sworn that the direction, like, well, because I had played this game so much, you would think that that would be, like, ingrained in my system, because I knew, okay, hey, Cole, come over here. There is a first aid spray. There is a barrel. There is a whatever. There's a guy that's going to come out here. Stop at this point. Like, I literally know this game that well.
Yeah.
So when I'm like, okay, Cole, hold your directional button this way. When the camera switches, you know, you have to keep it that way. Like, it must have changed somewhere along the way, because, like, that didn't end up happening. Like, we ended up dying because there's, like, this whole chase run away from falling. Yeah, there's lots of those, but, like,
you're running away from a monster toward the camera, and midway through the scene, there's, like, a little cutscene of, you know, like a car crashing into a thing, and then when it goes back, Leon and Helena are running away from the camera, but still in the same direction. So Q Jala giving me the advice, like, yeah, just always hold down, you know, like, just otherwise they'll turn around and run right into the monster that they're running from. And then the cutscene happens, and then the two of us do a whoop alley-oop back around 180 back into the advancing mouth of the monster.
Wasn't it like a plane it was crashed behind them and was destroying the road or something and it
like
was
that,
like collapsing.
Yeah.
But either way, like, the whole point was, you know, hold this button in this direction so that you don't turn around. And then, like, I don't know, like, something must have changed in there, or I don't know, perhaps my memory file was corrupted. I do not know which is the true thing, because it has been so long since this game came out. However, I was very convinced that that was the right way, and I was mystified when, you know, we died
It made for extremely fun footage. So.
Oh, it was really funny. And, like, you know, of course, like I said, if you guys go back to watch the VOD, definitely anytime that I say, hey, Cole, wait a minute, hey, Cole, do this thing, just be aware that I'm going to die, like, immediately after I see that. So, you know, but that's okay. I mean, like, it was fine. There's, like, no stake for dying, because when you come back, you actually come back with all your health and all of your items and stuff. So, like, it doesn't matter if you die or not. So
the checkpointing is pretty kind.
Yeah, the checkpointing is kind, so it's not like you ever, like, every time that we've died, it's been a checkpoint right beforehand, so it hasn't been a lot of backtracking or anything. You just get back on the hamster wheel right away, so.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's good. What else have you been playing, Jala?
All I've been doing is streaming, because after I streamed with you, I was busy, like, during the rest of last week, so the only other gaming I did was streaming Vampyr yesterday. I was not sure if I wanted to keep streaming, because I had already streamed for 2 days in a row. But then I was like, if I don't keep this up, I'm going to just, like, fall off of doing it. Yes. And, like, you know, I won't get back to it after the Hexcrank stream is done. So I'm going to go ahead and keep on as best I can, unless I literally don't have time. So in Vampyr, the last time, I couldn't remember if you could respec for free or not. I mentioned that, like, about the leveling screen, and I confirmed that yes, you can respec as a free action. So you can respec as many times as you want to change your character's skills.
Hmm.
So, but anyway, last time I left off at the murder of somebody who had my mother's brooch, and I was trying to track down the killer, and I needed to stop and go level up. I basically hit a wall and died a few times to just, like, some tough enemies in the area that were, you know, tougher than some, you know, I wouldn't call it a mini boss, but kind of like an area strongest character in the area kind of, grouping, that once you killed those guys, it triggered a new cutscene. So I guess it effectively was like a mini boss. I kind of bounced off that a couple of times, so I needed to run away and go eat somebody to get some levels. And once I did that, boy, it was so much easier. Like I think I gained one or two levels. And when I did, I came back and it was like, no big deal. So that was, what I'm finding is anytime I bounce off something, it's basically because I'm not the right level, because I'm not eating. I'm not actively eating all of the citizens in London. And that is my issue. I am not eating enough people, apparently. Mm. So, anyway, the villain of this new section, for anybody who's keeping track, it's the Red River quest line. So the villain of this particular section has a really neat idea for a story beat, and I don't want to talk about it in detail because it's like a total plot ruiner. So go watch the videos or go play the game, one or the other. But anyway, it has a great idea, but it wasn't, unfortunately, very well executed, because it would have had a lot of emotional stake, and it would have, generate a whole lot of pathos, except for the fact that there wasn't enough buildup beforehand, or basically any buildup beforehand, to create that emotional investment and impact when the shit hits the fan. So, I was warned about it, that, oh, this next part is, pretty rough. The story beat does not land, and I actually think I was expecting it to be a lot worse than it was. It kind of wasn't on the mark, but it wasn't terrible.
Yeah.
So, when I was fighting the boss in this particular segment, I bounced off of that boss as well. So I had to run off again. And then, like, on my own time today, I actually went to go heal some people in some of the districts who needed to be healed, because, as I've mentioned before, if you have people who are sick in your district and you rest, then the health of the overall district goes down and everything gets worse. Yeah. So you have to, before you rest, you have to go take care of all the citizens that are sick. So I went ahead and ran around and did that, and healed a bunch of people, so that the next time that I start up the game, I can probably just make a beeline back to the boss fight and just go ahead and do that the next time around. So Lucas, or Glucose in chat, in the Slack channel, said that this game really shines in the narrative, and that is really an accurate assessment in my experience. It's not that the combat is terrible, but it's not, the best part about this game. Like, this game really shines when it's got the social interactions and the seeking clues and all of the different types of choices that you have to make with that. That's really where this game is most engaging. And as a matter of fact, although I've been playing this game for about 24 hours now, I still find myself feeling kind of surprised when I actually am emotionally gripped by a scene, or, like, if I'm like, hey, this character is actually pretty relatable and things like that, because it just, I guess because the graphics are kind of funky, and, like, there's a couple of other things about this game that are slightly kinky. It's just kind of like, I don't expect it to have those really, really good moments, but then it does.
Yeah.
And then it just kind of, like, I guess because it has those good moments, it makes me a little bit more willing to forgive some of the jankiness of it. Like, it's definitely got some flaws for sure. And combat is something that is very commonly discussed as being one of those problem areas. But it is still a game that I would recommend people at least watch somebody else play through, even if they do not want to do it themselves for one reason or another. But yeah, I've been having fun with it. I will continue. Like I said, I played for, I want to say close to an hour and a half or 2 hours, something like that. The usual time where I start getting fatigued and I'm just like, if I come up against something really, really hard, it's better for me to just stop the game and then start up the next time fresh,
Yeah, yeah.
And that was the kind of scenario I was at when I stopped. yesterday. So when I get back into it this next week, I will work through finishing off that boss and then probably doing some side quests in some of the areas that I have not done the side quests yet, because I need to unlock some stuff so I have more people to eat. So, yeah, that's the update on Vampyr. I'm still in Chapter 3. It's like the longest. I did not remember Chapter 1 or Chapter 2 being this long, but it seems like I've been in Chapter 3 for about a million years.
What has the longer Chapter 3, this or Octopath? It's a joke question. I know it's Octopath.
Well, I would say Octopath, except, you know, I don't know, like this feels really long.
Yeah.
And yeah, hour for hour, I think they might even be tied. So, because the Octopath chapter, like once you unlock the cities in Octopath, it's not, you know, like a long ordeal to get to, you know, the different areas and go through each of those little chapter scenarios. Yeah. So I don't know. It actually could, because, you know, I'm 24 hours in and I'm on chapter 3 still. I have more chapter 3 to go before I'm done. I would say probably this game has a longer chapter 3.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's what I got. Anything else? Any questions?
No. I mean, just based on this description and the little time that I spent with it, the Alpha Protocol comparison seems to hold.
Cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Neat. And David, bring us home.
Yeah, so I've just been kind of continuing on with Immortal Unchained. I beat the initial kind of three sets of locations, which is, you know, sort of the point where the, at least from what I've been able to see, where the game kind of opens up a good deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I've been continuing on. Man, the section immediately after that, though, or I guess at least if you go to the Abyss first, which it seems like is kind of what it's pointing you towards, is just incredibly, incredibly rough. Just, I don't know, the demons that come out of the little like pods with the dual submachine guns.
Yeah, so you're in the not the cauldrons. It's like the sepulcher or the mausoleum or something like that. That area is ridiculously.
Aren't those all synonyms?
Kinda. Yeah, that area is exceptionally difficult. Specifically because it is all about kind of. Ambushes is probably a little bit too on the nose for it. Basically, you'll be walking down a hallway and you'll think everything's clear, and then boom, pod opens and this guy's behind you. It is all about confining you to hallways and then kind of closing you in with enemies.
And the other thing is just these are the only enemies I've found so far that at least I haven't been able to find any weaknesses on. Like the area is too small for you to dodge around behind them. The hallways are too narrow. Mm-hmm. And you know, I haven't been able to figure out any way to like trigger a reliable like stagger or anything like that. And similarly, they have a super long attack window. So yeah, so that has been kind of interesting. So I've been exploring some of the other areas, particularly there's kind of the fire world or whatever.
Yeah, the burning woods.
Right, which that was interesting because almost it just kind of ended up most of my weapons that I'd invested in were fire elemental. So it definitely took some time, you know, respecking on that.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the other area I've been exploring is, Apexian or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, going into the Apex Citadel, yeah.
Right, and that's real interesting because I feel like that's kind of the sweet spot in the game in that, you know, there's a lot of enemies that are very, very powerful. But they tend to all, you know, revolve around a very specific mechanic that that you basically have to learn to exploit and work with.
Yeah.
So in particular, the teleporting enemies are kind of fun because at least for me, like my strategy is pretty much to get them to like teleport right in front of me and just start using my melee attacks.
Yep.
which can be can be very fun because you can very explicitly like ambush them or whatever.
Mm-hmm. And like if you play with them enough, you'll start kind of being able to predict where they're going to jump to based on where you're at.
Exactly.
So you can kind of corner them, which ends up being really important because those teleporting angels don't go away. They just get worse and they just get more deadly.
Yeah, exactly. So that's been kind of fun. The NPC quests continue to just be completely BS. Most notably, the guy in that area just up and died. There wasn't even a at least in the other area, I started a fight and then died, whereas in this one he just keeled over.
Yep, I've not been able to figure out how to get him to the end. So,
yeah, the only thing I've been able to figure out is I think merely entering the room he's in counts as starting the objective.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you either don't immediately complete it or die, it counts that as him getting killed, which is a little questionable, but... I'm also, starting to get into the higher tier weapons. So, starting to experiment with, that a little bit more.
Yeah.
Right now, the one I'm building towards is this one. It's the Archivist Defender or something like that, where it apparently regenerates ammo. Which is interesting because it's kind of a mech gun, but in this game, the ability to shoot as much as you want whenever you want is definitely a perk you normally don't have.
No, that is not a luxury you get.
Yeah, so I'm interested to see if that's enough. Being able to, for example, afford to take pot shots at enemies from long range, if that kind of compensates for the fact that the gun otherwise is kind of meh.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, strangely enough though, I have the one weapon I've not gotten, I've only gotten one of and I haven't been able to get the stats for it yet, is the auto shotgun, which seems like that's the gun that most people use. That seems like that's very much the meta.
Yeah, auto shotguns are very powerful. I don't want to say they're a beginner gun or whatever, but when I was getting some before I play style advice about the game, said auto shotgun is going to be a good thing to lean on.
Yeah, the other thing I've started unlocking is there's what they call them remnant worlds, which are basically just they're theoretically separate stages, but they're pretty much just one room with a boss.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're like little bonus bosses or kind of boss versions of regular enemies. Yeah,
right, exactly. And there's one I've got to that I can't really see how you could almost even beat it without an auto shotgun. That's the one where it's just continuously spawning suicider enemies.
Yep.
While you're fighting the boss.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
But so far it's really interesting. It's also interesting. I've been reading some of the reviews for the game, and some of the reviews are just incredibly missing the point.
They're very, very off base. We make a big point of that in kind of the wrap up episode. On Bonfireside Chat. Covering this, which is that the treatment this got in reviews was kind of ridiculous. Also, it's ridiculous that basically no major outlet got it and reviewed it. So mm-hmm. you've got small outlets, which can be fine, who kind of unanimously really, really focus on stuff that is not necessarily going to bother people who are looking for a Souls style game. And mm-hmm. just that fact damns this game because it is going to suffer on game rankings or Metacritic or what have you.
Right.
Like if you look at the actual reviews that it got, there are like two of them, and that's what's dragging its average down.
Yeah. The one I found that was just kind of shocking was Kotaku's, which as far as I can tell, literally the person played the first level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's like, well, you know, things kind of change from there.
Yep. Yeah, it absolutely it deserves more of a look than I think a lot of people were inclined to give it to, including me, you know, at the start before we did it for a show.
There is one I haven't gone all the way through it yet, but there is one kind of pseudo think piece on it like that was discussing this as being the game that's kind of emblematic of what they called like AA games. Which I feel like it is very true, and it's a really interesting idea, and also for me is sort of like that's probably my sweet spot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is filled out, it is robust, there's a lot to it, but it's also very modest.
Right. And it's also not just like, you know, the EA like soulless, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Let's move them loot boxes.
Right.
Still enjoying it. Still. Oh, I did enjoy. I got the deal with it thing.
Oh yeah, that's fun. I was real shocked when that. So if you die with 30,000 souls on you, like if you lose 30,000 souls, then it kind of does it does this like very cheesy meme style like overlay basically taunting you like, haha, deal with it, guess what, you just lost a bunch of souls, you dumb piece of shit.
Literally the little like pixelated sunglasses drop down to be like on the monster that killed you.
Yes,
you're kidding me.
Yeah, they do. No, it
that's not a thing. No, that's a lie. That's definitely a lie.
It's so weird because it's completely like not in matching with the tone of the rest of the game.
Yep. I know that I bemoaned when Devil May Cry, you know, says like, hey, maybe you want to play on the dipshit difficulty. However, I also love when Immortal Unchained did that just because it came out of nowhere. I thought like maybe I got invaded by another player or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Holy shit.
Yeah, because like at no point, like when you're killed, does the camera do anything besides do the Dark Souls thing of like focusing on your dead body while the screen fades out? No, like it moves over to the thing that kills you. So I was like, wait a minute, was somebody controlling that monster? Just down the line, it was very good.
Oh, it's like the what's the fight from the original Demon Souls that was a character controlled?
The old monk. Yeah, it wasn't, but it's explicitly not that. It's just the game taunting you for, you know, losing a lot, which like if you're playing Souls games, you have lost way more than 30,000 souls in the past. Like that's a huge part of,
you know, we need to test the upper limits to find if there are any other stages of this end screen.
Like, I'm fine with that. I'm fine letting somebody else do that.
Someone out there needs to check.
I'm more interested to see what the expansion's like. You know, just to see, I don't know, like if they change up any of it, you know, what they do. I'm really ready. They have apparently promised to tone down the sniper enemies. So I'm kind of excited for that. But
nice. Yep. Yeah,
I don't know. Like overall, it's just a super, super fun game. I would recommend playing it, and also, you know, watching Bonfire Side Chat. That might be a good thing.
Yeah, you could listen to it too. Probably be pretty boring to watch it.
You know,
I didn't mean to be pedantic.
You don't
with
know
you.
My was synesthesia.
They, yeah.
Well, I can't pronounce that joke.
just take an edible and look at a Winamp visualizer. It's fine.
Oh boy.
Oh, we've been going for a while. Did you have any? Are you okay? Bumping anything else you have to next week?
Yeah, David? No, that's all I have. So
okay. Cool. Well, how do you all feel about bundling it up?
Buttons.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Level. Like I said, we've been going for a while. I would like to go to sleep. So we're not going to do an awful lot of admin. Really happy to have you here. You know, the usual things you can do, Patreon and telling your friends and coming back next week and ratings and reviews. All of those are greatly appreciated. Additionally, if you are in the upper Midwest, you can come see me at the Midwest Gaming Classic, April 12th, 13th, and 14th, I think.
Oh, cool.
It'll be a good, good time. We're doing a live watch out for Fireballs. We're figuring out the meetup. Yeah, it'll be fun. Am I forgetting anything important?
Don't think so.
Okie doke. So I've been Cole Ross. You can watch my streams on Twitch at DuckFeedTV.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me on Twitch at GreenLaser73, streaming Devil May Cry 5.
I'm David Meismith. I'm feeling very let out. Apparently, I'm not one of the cool streamer kids. No,
you don't have anything to prove. You're fine.
That's all I got.
And I am Jolichon in places, including Twitch.
Mm-hmm. And stick around for some titles.
All right.
I have two. One is selfishly one that I said. It is Tell a Story with Your Shrubs. The other is Loading Scream.
Yep.
That's pretty good.
Jala, what do you have?
All I have is, have you been on this podcast?
Oh. Dennis, how about you?
I had In Summer. I had Loading Scream as well. Hide Your Devil Triggers. this is from your Plague Inc., but I hope you like Cauliflower. It tickled my fancy for some reason. I don't know why. And then I can't pronounce that joke.
Let's see. I hope you like Cauliflower. I can't pronounce. I'm typing really slowly today. I'm sorry.
You're good.
David, how about you?
I did not record any, unfortunately. Sorry.
There's always one. By the votes, it's Loading Scream. How do people feel about that?
Sure.
Yeah, I like it.
Cool.
Let's do it.
All right.